felt that attitudinally there has been, or even needed to be, fundamental change. People who are in power deal with and recognize power far more than they do good feelings and nice guys and doing it for the right reason.
Yeah, but they also deal with perceptions of reality.
That's right.
If their perceptions are...
That's what I'm saying.
That the attitudes out there have changed a little bit or shifted, they're going to shift with it.
That's not a but. That's precisely what I'm saying. Okay? Is precisely. Okay? They'll deal with those realities.
I'd say there hasn't been any shift in basic social attitudes, but it's just a shift in perceptions among the political leadership. If there had not been, you wouldn't... Some of the things that are happening in the legislature wouldn't be happening now.
Right.
You know? Like the consumer protection thing that just passed, which...
Was that passed primarily for the benefit of black?
No.
Robert Clark thinks it was very much of an underlying awareness that blacks would benefit, and that this was generally perceived by the legislature, many of whom have constituencies that are at least part black and a substantial part black, and it was also something that would not offend whites, and the typical white would not perceive it that way, but that there was a very much of a conscious perception in the legislature.
I'm glad to hear that. Again, that would be a response to the reality of their voting power, which is what I'm saying. If you diminish that reality, their reaction to the needs of black constituents would diminish.
So if you did not renew the Voting Rights Act, you would certainly stand the risk.
I'm not prepared to say that we'd go all the way back. I think it's fundamentally, absolutely important for it to be reenacted, because I don't think we can afford the risk. But I doubt, I seriously doubt, that blacks are prepared under any set of circumstances to go back to what once was. And that any attempt to do it would be catastrophic.
But if you stop going forward and you're going backward, aren't you almost in terms of political development?
Yes. And this is why I say I'm still uneasy. I've said this earlier, that I am uneasy about the problem of only having achieved the appearance of integration, the appearance of equality, without it going down far, far deeper. Because I think that we may have created the old north. Whether we keep these laws in existence or have that which lessens that, okay? One of the problems in the north with the appearance of equality, without really structural change that involved blacks far more in the sharing of power and the sharing of opportunity, a frustration level rose that led to the riots of the 60s. And without a continued movement to involve blacks in the South, particularly in Mississippi, in the goods of the society, you risk that even now with what you have.
What does the term Southern strategy mean to you?
Oh, to me it means Nixon and the administration presuming that the Southerners to whom they have to relate and with whom they're seeking to serve are white Southerners, and that it means to read out to a great degree the benefits and gains made by black Southerners, that he's played to the most conservative element in of the white South, that he's sought to appease to a great degree the forces that would at least maintain things where they are, if not move toward a retrogression.
The term conservative is kind of the mean to mean the segregationist. It used to have a different meaning, but right now it's the segregationist.
I can't ascribe to that. I think many segregationists are conservatives, but I like the word liberal. I hate to mean both words.
But when Republicans speak of them as having a conservative party, what does that mean to you? Is there a racial connotation there from your perception?
I not necessarily, okay? Because I think there are conservatives who are conservatives, okay? I think there are conservatives who are racist. One does not necessarily mean the same. It's just simply because I think the word has value, that I think it's used that way and perceived that way, okay, by many people.
I think historically it meant holding on to the status quo. but recently it has taken a different connotation.
When it's used by the guy Clark Reed, in many ways it's a code word. When it's used by Thurman, I think it's a code word to the racist. I don't necessarily use the word that way, okay? I think the Republican Party has taken, has gained much of its growth from the forces of racism in the South.
Most of the white politicians we've interviewed view the whole racial problem as behind them. You ask them, they say, that's behind us, we're over that. Now that we're beyond, we got over that hang-up, now we can do many things that need to be done in this state socially and economically.
The proponents of the New South and a century ago said the same thing.
Okay. But I have to say, those are the perceptions. And it's almost with the relief that they tell you about it, but somehow this is now, but you're saying it is not really put behind you.
No.
But that's my question to you is, if that's the way they perceive it, what does that mean?
It means,
the schools have been integrated, so that's done with, okay?
It means that they think that they don't have to deal any further with the problem of racism. And I think for many of them, I think, that's so hard. I think for many Southerners, they don't understand the ways in which they're racist. And they think they've dealt with the necessity of the legal requirements and that I think some of them can honestly say to you, yes, we put that behind them, and in a sense mean that. You know, I almost hate to say this and give them this, but it's the truth. Because they don't understand the degree to which their kind of racism affects and oppresses black people. They think that that which they have, which is not shared equally by blacks, is not a matter of who they are as whites, and the condition of racism historically and their continued racist, you know, attitudes. But they see it as the structural thing, the dual systems. And for some of them, when they say it's behind us, I think they actually mean that. I think that many others know a hell of a, most, you know, in leadership know that's not so, but it's politically the right and proper thing to say. If you want to find out whether blacks are satisfied with where they are, the answer is going to be hell no, they're not. There are many who are pleased with the progress that's been made and say, hey, yeah, we've come a long way. You'll hear that a lot of places, how far we've come. But coming behind that is how much further we have to go. And they see that, blacks see it as a racial thing.
Do you see any, you know, is any black feeling at all that racism, that all the racial problems are behind us? Or is it a pretty much universal feeling among blacks that that's?
I think pretty much universal that we're still dealing with a racist society and a racist system. Yeah, I just, there are some who probably feel that way, but there's so few that it's not worth mentioning. You may run into them, have you?
Blacks?
Yeah.
No.
I hate absolute statements. I mean, my thing is, I don't couldn't conceive of how a black would feel it's behind him. But there might be somebody who does. I couldn't conceive of it, and the blacks I know don't think that.
Yeah. Well,
because politics is the way to win in this state is no longer to do it using the racial relations as the issue to win. Mm-hmm. That because, in a sense, that is removed from the public forum, it opens the opportunity for blacks to get more education, more economic opportunities, and so on. I think that's what some of them are saying.
And I think some of them mean that.
All right.
Okay.
I mean, you don't use race, but by any end, though, by gosh, race is broken.
Was it in the last governor's race?
I said it's an open, openly discussed issue. There are many ways to get at it subtly. And the question is whether or not by getting at it subtly is still the way to win.
It is. In some places, it clearly is.
In the last governor's race in the runoff, did you perceive race as an issue between Waller and Sullivan?
In the runoff? Oh, yes, very clearly.
All right, how? And by whom?
It had to do. I'm trying to remember this damn thing because it was very clear that Waller. In his Robert feeling on the private school thing, made an appeal to the white racist vote. He was far stronger far support, more support, one. Two, if my recollection serves me correctly, a good deal was made over the fact that Sullivan and some of his political ads had blacks in them. Waller did not. You know, there were things like that, and it was talked about at the time.
Talked about among blacks.
And among whites. Okay. It was pretty clear that Waller made a pitch to say he wasn't after the black vote. He was, but he made it appear that he was not. Sullivan appeared to seek the white vote, black vote out a bit more than Waller did. I think it was an issue, and I think that while Sullivan was identified as wanting and trying to get more of the black vote, but it wasn't the only issue.
But there was a perceived, recognizable difference between 71 and 67 between yeah. John Doe and
It was far more subtle. Okay. Far more subtle.
So as an open issue, it becomes more and more submerged and sublimated, but you still say there are going to be clues and so on.
Oh, there, yeah, yes. And when you get down to local level, it sometimes isn't all that subtle.
Well, as the race becomes more and more visible, it's going to have to be more and more subtle.
Right.
On a different political level, so to speak, do you think that the loyalists and the regulars are going to get together before 76?
It is my hope that they will get together.
You think they will?
But right now, nobody's able to answer that question until we see who's going to be elected governor. Much will hinge on that. I think there's a possibility that they can get together. Me, personally, I'm only willing to get together if it deals with the issue of local power and not simply the state executive committee. I would tend to think that that feeling is represented by a majority on the Loyalist Executive Committee. And that will be the crucial nut as to whether or not the governor, elect or in office, whichever, is prepared to swing the weight that he could swing to deal with sharing the power at the local level.
How does either side gain in any kind of resolution of this thing? Which is the fundamental question. Why should they get together?
Gain if they get together.
Yeah, but who's willing to go through the battle to do it?
Well, let him answer the first question first.
Okay.
How did they gain?
The situation as it stands right now is that the regular, so-called, control the political machine within the state at the local level. Control it pretty strongly, except for perhaps Greenville, Jefferson County, Holmes County, three or four other counties where we do in fact have political control of that machinery. And that's important to the election because it affects the election, who's poll watcher, who's not, what have you. I think we'd have a much fairer election if it were not controlled by them. It's also, the reality is that the loyalists control the relationship to national politics. That national recognition is something that the regulars want and feel that they need. Otherwise, they wouldn't constantly be fighting the legal battles. They would have said, to hell with it. That local sharing and local control is something that the Loyalist Party needs if it's to continue to affect any kind of fair political representation within Mississippi, in which blacks and whites are involved governmentally, somewhat according to their numbers. So that both have a need. If it can be put together to meet the needs of both, so that sharing is done across the line, in a general sense, both political segments would gain. Now, when you get down to a particular local area, there'll be losses and gains that are different. For the rank-and-file party leadership in most counties in Mississippi, it would mean that, by and large, whites would have to give up something and blacks would gain a fair amount. In some areas, blacks aren't certain they want to share that with whites either, in a few places, okay? Just as whites are not sure they want to share where they already have it. So that gaining and losing depends on where you are. But by and large, both sides would gain
if they shared that. You could have a strong political party that is far more representative of the people of Mississippi, and neither side honestly represents the people at this point.
If you ended up with this type of coalition politics, do you think the present regulars would stay within the Democratic Party, or would many jump across, become Republicans, and reorganize?
I think a number of them would jump across, but I think you'd have then you'd end up with two pretty strong parties that are fairly equal, and might be a very good for the political system in Mississippi.
You think reapportionment in the next election is going to result in election of more blacks to the legislature?
If we win the suit, because only if it's single member legislative redistricting that's not severely gerrymandered. Reapportionment through the legislature simply will not increase significantly the number of blacks, because they'll gerrymander it. They'll do it for their own political survival. If racism wasn't even a factor, they would do it for their own political survival. It's got to be done. That's one that will have to be done through the courts.
Is Eastland going to be the key figure on the resolving the differences between the regulars and the loyalists?
Well, I don't know what it will be next time. One thing is very certain. When Eastland's seniority was attacked and threatened prior to the 72 convention, the regulars were far more open to resolving. They kept the discussion alive at a very honest level. Once Eastland's seniority was clearly established, and we did not lose it without the coalition of the two forces, their negotiation went from good faith to bad faith. It appeared to be reasonably good and decent negotiations up until then. Now, that doesn't answer your question. I can only tell you what it was in the past. I don't know if we'll mount the effort, can mount the effort to attack it this time. I doubt that we can.
So the question next time becomes then a question of who controls patronage if you have a Democratic president.
Mm-hmm. Who controls patronage, one, and two, the degree to which the governor seriously wants to bring about a whole Democratic Party in the state of Mississippi.
So if the governor fails to do that, you could end up with a case that it may end up being a question of the President of the United States having to do it, right? Let me ask you a question. If you had a Democratic president elected in 1976 and this issue were still not resolved, and he in effect told the Mississippi loyalists and also told Senator Eastland,
patronage came through the loyalist party,
unless this thing gets resolved to his satisfaction, do you think there'd be resolution?
I think there might well be.
Would the loyalists settle under those conditions?
There'd be a real... That would be a problem. Right now, the loyalists can act... Essentially, the leadership of the loyalists can act essentially for the good and interest of their constituency. The vested interest held by the leadership at this point is such that their integrity can overcome any desire to maintain, their power position. It would be hard, and they'd have to give up something. If there is a coalition, Aaron Henry has to give up something. Pat Darien probably loses her position. The whites within it, to some real degree, lose something nationally. I feel very strongly that their integrity is such that they would want coalition for the good of the whole state as of this time. Were they to share the patronage, I'd like to feel that that would still be the same. It would be a much more difficult decision for them to make under those conditions. It would be a far more difficult decision to make. I believe that we have some really good, decent people in leadership in the party. So I hope for the best.
Well, if the conflict is not resolved and you have a Democrat elected president, and Senator Eastland wins control of the patronage, would you consider that to be a sellout of the blacks in Mississippi?
Well, first of all, yeah, I would be. There's no question about that. My real opinion is that if you have a man who gets elected president, it won't be done simplistically as that. There'll be a little bit of here and a little bit there. It'll be a carrot stick thing towards resolving it. I think there's real push to resolve it from the leadership of the National Democratic Party right now. But the greatest mistake made by the regulars would be the mistake that Waller made, which is to underestimate the political skill of a man like Aaron Henry, and Pat, and Harding, and some of the others. Waller campaigned with the slogan that essentially seemed like he was saying, I'm nothing but a redneck with a hole in my hand. And folks thought it was just a political strategy. The problem is that's what he is. And he underestimated it. He thought he could take it. I don't think a more savvy governor would do that.
Strategically, among Mississippi blacks in the 1975 elections, do you see any concerted effort to run blacks as third-party independent candidates of the two political parties?
For 75?
Yeah.
No. Unfortunately, we never think our political strategy out that far ahead.
Let me ask you, in 1975, you think that's apt to happen?
No.
What I'm saying is you view the arena as essentially within the Democratic Party to get blacks elected, or you view it,
kind of a third party. We might run as independents again.
Okay.
But that will depend too much on the conditions at the time to forecast it. I would tend to think we'll run primarily as independents unless the issue has been resolved. But in each
county, issue?
The issue of pulling the party together.
Oh, the oil stuff.
Yeah. I don't think it will be resolved, and I think we'll run primarily as independents.
I think it goes back to what we mentioned a few minutes ago, in that the South has been historically Democratic. More recently, by gosh, it has turned Republican, again, because of race. And that's why I'm saying conservatism now means racism.
Well, you know, this book that we think we're trying to rewrite or replace, V.O. Key, his essential hypothesis was that if you understood the politics of race in the South, you understood Southern politics.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's 25 years ago. Is mm-hmm. that hypothesis still
by God, 25 years ago, you couldn't name a white Republican in the South. You couldn't find one.
But is race still the central issue in Southern politics?
It is.
You think so?
It's tied up. It's interrelated with Republicanism and your Democratic Party.
See, the question is, you don't deal with it in the same way, but it's there.
It's there.
But is that still the key to understanding all Southern politics?
Yes. It's the key right now to understanding politics at this particular stage.
It is.
Now, the word all. It's the key to understanding Southern politics.
It is, by gosh.
There are other forces that interplay with it. The other things that are beginning to happen, but they're not yet of significance in terms of the central. For example,
what has changed is the black role in politics is what has changed.
Not the key issue. The key issue was one of how to suppress blacks. Now the key issue is how to deal with them in a political contest where they have some power. Is that right?
Hmm?
Is that a fair restatement of it?
That's a fair statement. By and large, in some places...
Keep them suppressed, I guess.
But getting
a different form way of keeping them suppressed. In some cases, they don't feel that the black strength is significant enough to deal with, and you have to recognize some places that it's not terribly important. But by and large, yes.
But the development of blacks into a significant political force in the South, if you assume that is the case, and I think you're correct on that, resulted from the force of outside pressures, primarily that of the federal government, which to some of it was a result of internal pressures from within the South from blacks, but it was imposed federal pressures that resulted in blacks being guaranteed the right to vote, et cetera, with the federal laws and the federal cases.
See, at one time...
If that federal pressure is removed, then what? The first Reconstruction, the Reconstruction era, ended with the removal of a federal presence. Did not result in the overnight disappearance of black political participation. You know, 10 years later, I think you still had some like 14 blacks in the Mississippi legislature.
But let me restate what you said. Okay.
Sure.
Please do.
The importance of outside and primarily federal pressure to bring about a change, political change in the South in terms of the influence and significance of the black population, which came about, which was a response to the efforts of blacks in and outside of the South and colleagues that were not black, was unquestionably that which permitted the change to come about. And should that power to, or mechanism be removed, then that would begin to change once again the political power and context within which blacks live. And the reason I'm turning it around, I guess I'm agreeing with what you want to say, is it's a fundamental mistake to read out the importance of the NAACP people in Mississippi in the 50s and the 40s and colleagues in the North who responded to that as a reason for the federal government's intervention. It's a tremendous mistake to read out the other forces that moved the federal government to intervene. It was not some noblesse oblige on the part of the federal government that in the 60s they decided to intervene in Mississippi and in other parts of the South. And your statement tends to assume that some mystical noblesse oblige on the part of the government happened and they reached down and did something.
I didn't mean it in that context.
I know, but it says it.
Right.
At one time, by gosh, both...
That was true in the abolitionist movement prior to that other intervention. Okay, and too much of history leaves that out.
At one time, both the state government and federal government, by gosh, were arms of suppression and oppression. We had no relief. Not until the federal government came in did we get some relief. We said, okay, we got a hand, and we got a hand here. Now, for the South to criticize, and they call them outsiders, they call Boo an outsider.
Because you called me an outsider the last battle we had. That's the one you lost.
They called Boo an outsider because he came here from New Jersey. Now,
you don't
it was no less wrong for Boo to come here and help his fellow Negroes, I'm going to use the term black because I despise that term, help his fellow citizens, Negroes, than it was for France to come and help America, which she was fighting for independence. You have the same parallel, by gosh.
Why do you despise the term black?
It's a term that Britain used in referring to its subjects. It's Negro subjects. I can't stand it.
The colonies, you mean?
Yeah, I can't stand it. For years, they used the term black, and we used the term black, and we said, don't call me black. And all of a sudden, they come on to call black. I refer to Negro. That's my term. Historically, that's my term.
Why did you accept what this Yankee told you? Why did you accept what this Yankee told you?
Yeah,
I mean, New Jersey is about as Yankee as you can get.
Yeah, but he told me a dog.
Oh,
we together. I'm from West Virginia, which is
that's border South.
Border state. So when I came here, I had my ideas about racism. I was as frightened as a bullet, boss. Scared as hell when I came here.
Leo, when they set up the Head Start system as a delegate agency in this county,
was chairman of that effort in ran that program. Now, we've done battle. Leo and I disagreed still quite frequently, not over major points, but, you know, this is parenthetic to what you're talking about. I think part of, we're not in Pike County extremely well organized. We can put it together whenever we want to. But part of that strength is that we've attempted to keep within the political apparatus here the right to disagree on strategies and styles. And unlike the Delta, this is true by and large of the Hill, unlike the Delta, there's no one guy who can run a county. Charles is an exception. He has problems with that exception. There's leadership in the Hills as opposed to a leader. And people have to struggle for it.
You mean there's a difference between the blacks in the Hills and the blacks in the Delta?
I believe very strongly.
Well, is it parallel to the difference between the Delta and the Hills, say, with whites 20 years ago?
Well, I think it parallels that to some degree, and parallels the plantation system and its effect and the dominance, kind of a dominance of the planter. You see it in the whites even now. There was far more the yeoman farmer kind of thing in the Hills.
So that lends
in the sense in the South, the Hills itself is a more democratized part of Mississippi than the Delta.
That's interesting. The plantation system has produced the kind of system politically in the Delta one man can control.
Right. They're docile. They're docile.
Because of a tradition.
You don't have a tradition of ownership in the Delta. For example, you know, were I ever to come in and try and tell people in Pike County what to do, tell them this is where we are, the folks would invite me, they just laugh. Okay? I mean, you got a whole tradition of land ownership. People with small farms have struggled against. You talk to people out in the rural parts, they'll tell you about when their granddaddy and their father used to fight the white caps. These are the folks who owned those 60 and 36 acre farms and worked their asses off. They didn't have power, but they struggled. They had a sense of their own, you know, of their own that they had. If you look and see where your black institutions are, you'll find that you had none in the Delta until 25 years ago. When was Mississippi Valley organized? Okay. See, your colleges are in the Hills. They ring the Delta, all right? You have two exceptions to that. One is the town of Mound Bayou. And that was, unfortunately, the compromise of 1890, was it not? In which the last legislature basically accepted that constitution in return for Mount Bayou's continued political involvement. And you did have black land ownership. The other exception are those few little communities where the Resettlement Act was played out in Mississippi, around Milestone, Holmes County, and down in Issaquena County, where you have farmers with those little 60-acre tracts of land. You take those exceptions out of the Delta, you don't get that similar kind of thing. All right, look again where there's strength, political strength in the Delta, developed around those areas where there are far more like the Hills. Why is it with all the money, and this is a question I'm asking myself, I don't know the answer. I know part of it, I have a feeling for it. Why is it that we've won no political victories in Sunflower County? We probably put more money in Sunflower County than any county in the Delta.
That background lack of institutional strength based on local ownership, farm ownership.
And infrastructure, the whole thing, okay? But we won in the third district of Bolivar County. That's where our strength is in Bolivar County, okay? We won around Cahoma, but a little bit. Move those out.
Why did Eastland run stronger in Wilkinson County than the statewide average? And yet in every other county in which McGovern got more than 40% of the vote, Eastland ran worse than his statewide average.
I don't know. I just don't know.
I think what's both the...
I missed that. I actually missed it.
It's puzzling. There's some curious patterns like that.
I think what both the Negro and the white must do in the South and the nation is to forget what happened years ago. We have to forge ahead. We have to plan. We not to look back, my gosh. I think another essential difference is, this goes back to you and me.
They're the state of West Virginia, border state. We were free enough not to feel hurt. That might have been bad.
That's interesting.
Bull was free to the extent in New Jersey that he thought everything was made. Whereas in the South, the Negro had no smack of freedom. Now, you know, I think the most dangerous folk are those who in the South and those in the North. In the North, they felt they were free, then they found out they were being hoodwinked.
Got mad as hell.
In the South, when they found out that they could fight, they became angry. Now, in the middle, in that border state, we played with both sides. My gosh, had enough communication with whites to say, "Well, you will if you would." But that's why we were not so terribly bitter. My gosh, but we know it's there.
Right, and that term strikes at what I was trying to get at. Okay.
The
change historically from total oppression to the surface changes has moved the South, this is what whites are talking about, to where we're free enough not to feel the hurt in the same way. And I'm fearful that we'll feel the hurt again. I know, yeah, we will have to for the next thrust, okay?
Now what do you see as the next thrust?
Next thrust is to keep on fighting. It's not over. And they sang again, I'm going to say again, they sang free at last, thing I might have realized, they sang it too damn soon, they we ain't free.
Well, in some places it goes on, where it goes on, like in Greene County, in Bolton, and other places, try and keep the struggle alive here. There'll be incremental change that'll be good. In other places, like Sunflower, where I think they're essentially depressed, where I think they've lost the thrust, where they feel hopeless, there are a number of variables that can happen, okay? Either folks will wake up with the same kind of anger they woke up with in the North, and that thrust will be a far more vitriolic, bitter, frustrated thing that either is channeled into constructive action or blows out in destructive. Or somebody will come on in and help organize that area and start them moving towards institutional change there. Now, it depends on whether the crucial thing to whether or not we succeeded in the 60s will be those areas where we left the infrastructure for institutionalization of the change process intact. Okay? That to me is crucial to success. There's no such thing as instant freedom.
You're looking at 20 or 25 years in that regard.
Pardon?
You're looking at 20 or 25 years.
I'm saying...
You're looking at a generation to see whether or not the changes...
Yeah, because... I'm saying that you're constantly... When I say there's no instant change, yeah, sure, you win victory.
Where you left that structure, that infrastructure intact, there weren't any changes made in that.
I'm saying that there were changes made, and whether that is perpetuated and built on.
But that still is a generation away.
I think the external.
Don't you need to have, for example, students who started the integrated school system and go all the way through before you can take a look at it?
Yeah, okay, you're using it a little different. I'm talking about
the
black
infrastructure.
I think all
changes are external, not internal.
As opposed to the general pattern of the societal or white thing. That's happened all over, okay? All right, but do you continue struggling or do you stop? Is the real question as to whether or not you solidify that base of change. It's part of the answer to the question about what happens with the. If the 65 and 70 amendments are continued or not. It depends on what was left in that community. In some communities, they wiped out any structural leadership. I think one of the gravest mistakes we made in Mississippi is that we came in and we did not perceive the institutionalization patterns that existed. And instead of building on them in many cases, we moved to erect ones that were not rooted and grounded in the turf.
But as you said, the original premise was that if you show people what is right, mm-hmm. they will then do what is right.
Mm-hmm. But that it obviously did work to some degree. The question is what the degree, okay? It was naive that would produce total and instant complete 100% change.
I think what changes we have now are external.
You want some more?
It'll take internal changes.
We're going to have to go for it.
Okay.
only internal changes will change or make of our society what it should be.
See, the effect of what we're doing with, say, Delta Foundation, which is a part of that, the bills in terms of, and here I'm again not talking about whether or not we change the law so that people have access, okay? But whether we build into that the means by which people can take advantage of it. For example, let me give you an example. Get an EEOC suit. Whether it's with some paper company or with state government, what have you. You win the right for blacks to be employed equally within that particular institution because they end up doing it that way. All right. So five or six are immediately employed. There's a slight upgrading thing that goes on. Without an institutional effort at outreach parallel to that, what you get is a limited opening and a struggle that it stays more open, it's more open. But without paralleling that with institutionalizing an outreach system to get blacks to be certain that they're trained to find out how to take the test, that process moves much slower. Okay? If you talk about the right to vote, you talk about having economic development, then you have to develop the opportunity, then you have to develop the institutions that grab that. And part of what I hear you talking about in terms of Floyd is Floyd is developing the institutional base to deal with that. This is what I'm talking about when I talk about an infrastructure.
That's what he said.
See, part of the mistake of the 60s is we came in.
What he says is the hardest work. That is the hardest work.
That is the hardest work. And that's time, day, and day, and day, and day. Okay? You take it and you make it be something. Sure, we've opened up the possibility of change.
It's not going to produce many heroes, though.
No. Okay. See, there's only certain times in which charismatic leadership, as important to it as it is, particularly in a time of rapid change and social upheaval, does not institutionalize processes. Okay? I think Toynbee, somewhere in his writing, makes a point about the difference between the states that were built around charismatic leadership, essentially, and the civilizations that were, and those were built around other forms, and of the lasting, the life of that kind of nation state, and they're weaker. I think he's essentially correct. That does not mean that heroes and charismatic leadership are unnecessary and wasteful. He said at certain points of time, they are what's necessary to take that articulated issue, to simplify it, move it out beyond, the complexity to something that all of us can converge around and get a handle on. And what you do with that afterwards is far more of an institutionalizing process. And that there are times in history that are complementary to one another. See what I'm saying?
Yeah, I understand it. You understand. I'm just saying that probably 95% of blacks don't understand it.
I understand that in Mississippi there really is no statewide black political organization. Is that true?
If you mean by that a really well-organized, well-run, accepted by everybody, there is no statewide black organization that meets those standards. But it's not true to say there is none. The NAACP certainly clearly is a statewide black organization that has rather considerable strength. The Loyalist Party is a statewide organization that has some strength and people have some identity with it. Otherwise, you could not have 82, but when it came necessary in 72, we had meetings in something like 75 counties, by local people who identified themselves as a part of that organization. It depends on what you mean by that. A really good, solid, strong one? No. Some, yes.
But are there several competing ones?
The teachers are another one. No, they're not really competitive. They might compete at a local level, but not at statewide.
Is there a getting together of black political leadership from Mississippi on a statewide basis to discuss political issues and candidates?
Yes, that happens through a number of structures. It happens certainly through the Loyalist structure to some degree, but many people say that's not sufficient. and they'll meet in other kind of statewide meetings.
How do you assess the Evers candidacy for governor? We hear two versions. One is that it did a great deal to arouse interest among blacks, to boost black registration, to create a greater awareness of the political process. The other is that it took away resources from local black candidates and had a detrimental effect to that extent. It took away resources and effort.
Okay. One, the first part is true. Okay, it did in fact help generate enthusiasm, movement, etc. Around it and voter registration. The problem is not that it took resources away, because it essentially did not. Because the resources that Evers received could not have been raised by the local candidates anyway. It did not take time and effort away from the local campaigns, because it enhanced the openness of it. What it did do, and it's the fault of a number of us, myself included, Charles wanted to run, and perhaps looking in hindsight, he should have run in the primary. One did his thing, not win, but had a better showing and did a runoff, and left the rest of the candidates to run primarily as independents later on. There are a number of us who felt that Charles, Aaron, Bob Clark, etc., had coattails, and that by their running at the same time with the local candidates, it would have enhanced their ability to get elected. What we found out is that Mississippi does not have institutionalized politics, it has personality politics, and that was driven home, and we found out that they do not have coattails. For example, Charles, you have a fall-off in Fayette at Jefferson County between Charles's vote and the guy running for Board of Education, Superintendent of Education, of I think some 43% in the black vote. He could not deliver a organization vote, okay? But that was no more true of Charles than it was of Bob Clark or of Aaron Henry or of Dr. Connors, etc., okay? And I'm using some names of people who are the only people who drew more than Charles did in their own district. That was Kermit Stanton, Aaron, Bob Clark, Dr. Connors, and that other doctor from up around Starkville, I forget his name. Okay? They outdrew, and by and large, Charles outdrew the local candidates. There are only two places in which there was, in fact, an organization vote that was consistent for all the campaigns. That was in the 3rd District of Bolivar County. That was really